is Visionary, a show exploring how nuclear powers your world. I'm Mary Carpenter.
And I'm Jordan Houghton. Let's jump in.
Hey, Jordan.
Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. I am really excited for our episode today. Our guest, Dr. Jatia Hart with Idaho National Lab. I saw her speak at a used fuel conference a year ago, and she absolutely dazzled me. And it has been my goal ever since then to have her on this podcast. And I'm so excited that we finally made it happen.
I am a huge fan. I mean, if we want to get people interested in nuclear and especially the next generation, we should just put Dr. Hart on TV all the time. I mean, she needs to be everywhere.
Yes, 100%. I want her to be my professional mentor, my best friend. I want all of her parenting advice.
Yep.
Listeners, you'll see, you will fall in love with her too. But something about her that we talk about right up front is the fact that she was on a season of Survivor. And Mary, I know you are a reality TV lover, and so I'm curious, would you ever do a show like that?
Oh my gosh, I've been waiting for this day where we can talk about Bravo on this podcast.
Would you be a Real Housewife?
So that is my favorite reality show, and I really don't discriminate between all of the different cities. I love all of them, and I watch all of them. But I don't think I would be a great housewife. It's too much drama. But, you know, Andy Cohen, if you want to call me, I will pick up the phone. You know, I will talk about it. If we want to bring Real Housewives of DC back, I mean, we could chat.
Andy Cohen, how about you? Call us.
Yes. You know what?
I watched a lot of the early seasons of Housewives. I haven't watched it lately. They kind of started to stress me out. I don't think I would want to be on one of those shows, but I do love a game show and was a contestant on Wheel of Fortune.
What? How have I never known this? I love Wheel of Fortune. Like, you were actually on TV.
I was on TV. I was 19 years old.
Oh my gosh. So you spun the wheel. You guessed all the phrases and words. I mean, you were full in contestant on TV.
Yep.
Oh my God.
That wheel is heavy.
Is it?
It is so heavy. Yes.
Oh, because you do see people kind of struggling, you know, like they put the whole body into spinning
You do. Like we were able to like spin the wheel a couple times before they like started rolling tape. And I think it's because of that. It was like way heavier than I thought it was going to be.
Did you win? I need all the details.
Okay. So what's really cool about it is they filmed a week of shows in one day. So you get there really early in the morning, they do the hair and makeup. Now, granted, this was 20 years ago at this point, so I don't know if they still do it this way, but you are with 15 people, like it's a group of 15, and you don't know who's actually going to play with you until later in the day. Mm-hmm. So you end up building camaraderie with all of the other people, as such that by the time you figure out who you're playing with, you've kind of want everybody to win because you've made good friends. So I came in second. And that was okay with me because I was like a just starry-eyed college student. And the woman who won my show had been trying to get on the show for like 20 years. Oh, and it was an absolute bucket list item for her. And she ended up getting to the bonus round and she won a Mazda Miata. And she was so happy and I was so happy for her. I did win $10,000.
Oh my gosh.
On the wheel.
That's huge.
It was great. Again, I was 19. So I was like, this is like the coolest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
And then I also, you know how there's like the prizes on the wheel?
Yes.
And like, you could win a trip to the Bahamas or something wonderful. I won a $1,000 Hallmark gift certificate.
No.
Yes.
You have greeting cards for life.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. My mind is blown. I wish you guys could see my face right now. Oh my gosh. Okay. So. Actually, we have two reality stars on this episode. Our guest today was actually on Survivor. She is amazing. She did Survivor, but like she's so much more than that. She is an influential woman in STEM. I mean, she has an amazing career at INL, which I'm so excited for you guys to hear her talk about. I mean, she's really, you know, pushing the next generation into nuclear. I mean, she does it all. And she's a mom. I mean, she is So impressive.
Let's get into it with her.
Dr. Jatia Hart is a nuclear engineering expert with over a decade of experience in the Department of Energy and in collaboration with national laboratories, currently serving as the Nuclear Nonproliferation Division Director at Idaho National Laboratory. She specializes in intelligence analysis, nonproliferation, and energy economies. Dr. Hart is also the creator of STEM Queens, a YouTube series highlighting Black women's achievements in STEM, and actively promotes diversity in STEM fields through mentorship and outreach activities. Jatia, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, we have yet to actually have a reality star on Visionary.
And you still don't. I'm not a reality star. I am a nuclear engineer. I am so sorry to disappoint you guys. But thank you, I guess.
Oh, well, in my eyes, it's very exciting. So before we dive into your work at INL, I have to ask about your experience on Survivor. Did you enjoy doing it?
I would not use the word enjoy. Wouldn't be the first word that came to mind with my Survivor experience. I am glad I did it. But it's tough. You know, I am not what you would call an outdoorsy person. You know, I do like my creature comforts. So it was definitely a challenge. I'm glad I did it. I met some new friends, got exposed to some new experiences, and I have people who think that I'm a reality star. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
Would you do it again?
Not right now. No, I was much younger then. Now I'm like, oh, if I fall and break a bone, how long will I have to be out of work? And, you know, adulting problems. So, but you know, never say never.
What about a different show like Traitors?
I like Traitors. I liked Traitors a lot. Yeah, I do. So I like playing games writ large. I like, you know, deck building games, Dominion, those sort of things. So that is why I was interested. I like the gaming aspect. I'm very competitive. So yeah, the, you know, backstabbing, the trickery, all of that is great. And it's very interesting to see it played in person. It ups it a lot. So I'm all about playing games.
Oh yeah, I bet. I bet it's so exciting in person.
I was just going to ask about the Soul Survivors organization that you formed with other Survivor alums. And I'm wondering if you'll share a little bit more about that and the importance of having diversity, not only shown on screen, but behind the scenes as well.
So I think that is the best thing for me that came out of Survivor was this opportunity to join with other Survivor former players and create the Soul Survivor organization. And it really came about because a lot of us were, you know, we talk about our experience and our time on the show, and it was a time, it was the pandemic, people were home. And then after the murder of George Floyd, we really looked at it and it was like, this is our chance to change, to do things a little bit differently, to change the way that we are portrayed on TV or at large, but also on our specific show, Survivor. So we banded together. We had people from season one all the way up to, you know, one of the more of the current seasons at the time. And we were able to make a change, talk to CBS, and they put together actually an initiative to change how people from minority groups were viewed on the show, and also to increase writers, production assistants, also behind the scenes, executive producers, to have a better and fuller portrayal of people of color and people from marginalized groups on the show. So very proud of that.
Beyond the Survivor organization you created, you do a lot of work to promote diversity in STEM as well, like developing STEM Queens. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, STEM Queens is a passion project of mine. While I was an American Association for the Advancement of Science fellow, and they had a fellowship basically to get the word out to women about STEM. It was called an If-Then Fellowship, and I was one of the fellows, and I got a grant to put together a YouTube show called STEM Queen. I got the idea because, you know, I feel like, yes, you can be a queen and you can be in STEM, both. You can serve while you're in STEM. And I just wanted to show young women different examples. And I was just basically asking my friends to come on the show and talking about, you know, what they like in current things. Real Housewives comes up a lot. And then how they got into STEM. And then for the last segment, we show off a special talent of theirs. So I actually had Miss Universe Ireland, who is a friend of mine, on there. And she is an industrial engineering major. And she came on. We talked about her journey and her career. And then she showed us how to do a nice smoky eye. So that's always good. You know, when you can learn something about engineering and a smoky eye, you won the day. So that's STEM Queens in a nutshell. Fun, science, tech, engineering, math, all of that.
Yeah. And that's what we need to do, right? To get this next generation. We always talk about how we need so many more workers and we need to get the youth involved. I mean, that's a great way to do it and incorporate fun things, you know, that people are watching on TikTok and different other places into, you know, a possible future career. So while we're talking about this, how can we continue to support more women, specifically more women of color in STEM first, but also how do we get them interested in, you know, being in the nuclear industry, you know, whether they're an engineer or working in communications or there's so many different jobs in nuclear.
So I think you really have to show them what's out there. Like it's hard, but I mean, keep giving them role models so they show you can see that there are women in nuclear and you can also be a woman in nuclear and also tap into, you know, those adjacent kind of careers. Like you said, communications, you can do nuclear communications. Definitely need people who know how to talk about science and specifically about nuclear. And I think also your CEO, Maria, love Maria. Like I remember when I was coming up through the industry, I'd always look at Maria and be like, that is the kind of nuclear engineer, you know, person I want to be. She's always very impeccably dressed, always has a great sense of style and knows her stuff. I actually serve with Maria on the Nuclear Energy Advisory Committee. And I'm always like, I want to sit next to Maria. We discuss fashion. She is a Veronica Beard fan. It's a clothing designer. And she like they need to give her some sort of endorsement deal because she's wearing the clothes. But it can start from something as simple as seeing somebody who, you know, piques your interest. And that's what I've done in a lot of my career. I'll see a person. I'm like, I like what that person is doing. I don't even know what their title is or what it is. And then I'll like ask them a few questions. I'll stalk them on LinkedIn, you know, to see how their career grew. And I think we just need to have that. And also, if you do want to develop women in people of color, you need to take a specific interest in them. I say take an interest in them the way you would take an interest in your child if you were trying to get a child to develop a career. Because a lot of times, women and people of color don't have those type of role models or those advocates to help them through the tough spots in their career. And everybody needs that.
Veronica Beard, if you hear this, call us. We're interested.
Yes, hashtag give Maria endorsement.
We're interested in that collaboration.
Yes, I have a feeling this is the first time there's been a discussion about Veronica Beard.
100%.
It is, but I'm here for it. Not fashion, but definitely Veronica Beard.
It was also the first visionary reference of a smoky eye as well.
Breaking down doors and ceilings and everything.
That's what we're doing.
You just mentioned Maria being an inspiration to you. And I'm curious if you have any stories of people have reached out to you because you inspired them to get into the industry.
You know, it's funny because if they do, I just ignore it because it sounds like I can't, you know, like I'm just a regular person. It's like when people call me a reality star, I'm like, no, I'm just me going through my life and stuff happens. So I can't call out any questions. I hope. I mean, I think people inspire me every day. I think you know, should always find inspiration in the world. I can, like, most of the times I interact with people and I try to, you know, draw on something I like or find out something I like when I'm first look at a person and I notice that and I'm like, how, you know, can I incorporate that? Can I pull that off? You know, whether it's a career or a Veronica Beard jacket or some heels. It's always like, you know, or, you know, are they charismatic? And I want to be more like that. So I think, you know, you don't have to have, you know, a list of accolades to be inspiring to somebody. You know, you inspire people every day just by being you.
So this is a big question. What's the one piece of advice you would give women who are looking to get into STEM?
Don't be afraid to go for it. Can't be afraid. I think a lot of things in life are scary. Sometimes I do not want to roll out of the bed and deal with my kids. I have two of them. They're terrifying some days. And you have to go for it. You have to suck it up and go for what you want to get things in life. So You have to conquer that fear and not be afraid and figure it out. Everybody has to figure it out. And we all do. So don't act like, you know, getting into STEM or even specifically nuclear energy and engineering is some mystic thing. Clearly people can do it, and so can you.
That's awesome.
Love it.
Love it. Yeah. You are an engineer at Idaho National Lab. Share a little bit about what you're working on there.
So right now I am the division director for nuclear nonproliferation. So it's the nuclear nonproliferation director. I have scientists who work on a plethora of different things. Loosely, one part is international security safeguards, and the other part is like radiation detection and measurement. So we have a couple of really cool projects that we have ongoing. In my division, there is the nuclear cyber team. And basically, they look at cybersecurity, but specifically for nuclear energy and nuclear power. So one of the interesting things that just came up with nuclear cybersecurity in the last year or so is Ukraine, right? So there were a lot of attacks on their critical infrastructure and energy grids. And we heard over and over about Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. And so, you know, we do things like train other foreign partners to identify cybersecurity attacks on nuclear facilities, how to be resilient against such attacks. And my nuclear cyber team is always traveling, always doing engagements with different countries. We call those bilateral engagements. So across my desk, I have to approve all the foreign travel. So I'm like, this person is going to Ghana, and this person is going to Kazakhstan, and this person is going to Argentina. And I'm like, how can I be on the nuclear cybersecurity team? That's what I want to know, because they are booked and busy and flying all over the world to share their skills. Also, another pretty cool project that we actually just one of my researchers got a Secretary of Energy Award, which is basically like the Oscars for the Department of Energy, was helping out for the Ukraine response team. So again, back to Ukraine, they had a lot of critical infrastructure, trying to secure different materials and training them up on different things that they needed to go in to make sure were secure in the time of war. Also, we have people who are converting research reactors. We had the German FRM2 low-enriched uranium conversion team actually just won another one of these Secretary of Energy awards. And basically what they did is they found out how to take this reactor that was using highly enriched uranium and reconfigure the whole thing so it works the same, but it uses less uranium. And that's a part of nonproliferation, because then that material isn't out there. It isn't available for misuse or diversion. So those are the type of things we do. We use technical know-how to reduce the nonproliferation risk, whether it being using less material or securing material or making sure that different cyber attackers or anybody else who wants to do harm to nuclear power or nuclear material, we stop them. That's what we do with our brains. Yes, brain power. So I think that's pretty cool.
It is very cool. And it's obviously very important. And how did you get into this? What led you to the nuclear industry?
By accident.
Really?
Oh yeah. This is totally by accident. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, no 17-year-old is, you know, thinking, oh, you know what I want to do? Nuclear energy. So
we have to change that though.
That is true. I hope, you know, one of these ladies up and coming, you know, is just way more knowledgeable than I was at 17. That is my hope and my dream. So I was going off to undergraduate, and I was a business major, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was good at math and science, but engineering just wasn't on my radar. To be honest, I thought engineering was like, you know, hard hat and bridge construction. And I was like, that doesn't sound like fun. I thought business, you know, was like, I think at the time there was this show out of Ally McBeal in Melrose Place. And all the women were in business and they wore like these power suits. And I was like, that's, you know, the type of power suit wearing woman I want to be. So I went into business, and my mom basically was like, you know, you're really good at math and science. I heard engineering was a good field. And she basically just straight up bribed me, and it worked. So I got into engineering. I wanted to do biomedical, but at the time where I was going, they didn't have a biomedical program. They were like, chemical, that's close enough. It was not. So I changed from chemical. And at that time, I was like, I just need a degree. So I got a degree in industrial. at the same exact time, I actually went underway on a nuclear submarine. I was in Navy ROTC. And I was amazed that a whole boat was like powered by nuclear and there were nuclear missiles on board. And I was like, well, how do you get to do this? And they said, this is, you know, nuclear engineering. People who, you know, are in charge of this are nuclear engineers. And so I decided that I was going to finish my engineering degree and go to grad school in nuclear. And I thought it was just cool because there's like good and evil. And so I specifically wanted to do nuclear nonproliferation. Because there's this dichotomy, you know, like who will be the shepherd between nuclear? It's good, it's evil, it's, you know, so, but in all honesty, I mean, that sounds cool, but anything that you have can be good or evil, you know, and I learned this along the way, you know, fire, it can be good, it can be bad, right? So you just have to think about technology. It's not the technology, it's the use of the technology. And that's what you really have to look at.
That's a great point. You've mentioned in the past that nuclear has had a historically challenging reputation. How do you feel about that now? Do you think that's still the case? Are you seeing progress there?
I think, yes, it does have, you know, it does have a reputation from the nuclear weapon. And had it not been for that development, we wouldn't have had the advances in nuclear power that we have had. I think it is becoming less and less of an issue because of the mechanisms, A, that we've put in place to make sure that people are not using nuclear weapons. And, you know, we have different agreements and treaties for that. And also because climate change and our energy crisis is just that. It is a crisis. So you can't, you know, pick and choose. It has everything has to be in the conversation if we are going to reverse some of the climate issues that we've been having and continue to grow our energy source. The only other kind of option I see is, you know, everybody turning your smartphone and, you know, nobody is up for that. We could reduce our electricity consumption, you know, but everybody wants to, you know, live the same standard and continue in that matter. So you have to think about that.
Yeah, no one really thinks about where the power comes from, charge our phone until it's not there. And you make a good point. You know, people we're in this climate crisis, energy needs are going up. Do you think because of all this that we've kind of entered a new chapter for nuclear? You know, we see all these new technologies coming out. Do you think, you know, it's a new day for the nuclear industry?
The nuclear industry always has legs. It's not going anywhere. Whether we start new reactors or not, nuclear is here to stay. I think we should be starting new reactors. I am anticipating greatly some of these advanced reactor design to come online. Being at Idaho, you know, we are the nuclear energy lab. So we actually have 4 operating reactors here at INL. And we are hoping and we know that we will be involved in any deployment of advanced reactors. And so that is something that I think is on the agenda. It's just racing to see who will get it done first. And there's a lot of things that go into it. So it shouldn't be taken lightly. And it's not. You know, we have lots of great researchers out here who are working with private industry to make sure that a lot of the designs or all of the designs we hope for advanced reactors actually think about nonproliferation and security during the design phase, during the development phase, during the deployment phase. So that's really a big thing here at INL, especially in national and homeland security, is to think about the security before we deploy it. You don't, you know, plop something down. It's like, you know, if I got diamonds, I'm not trying to put my diamonds down and be like, how am I going to guard that? You know, I'm buying the safe before I get the diamonds, right?
Yeah.
So that's essentially what nuclear nonproliferation is. And we hope in the deployment of advanced reactors, they come and see us at Idaho and other institutions to develop that and put it into the recipe, you know, put the chocolate chips in before you bake the cookie.
How do you see that coming in? Because we're seeing interest globally in U.S. technology, U.S. nuclear energy technology. How do you see that nonproliferation aspect coming into play as we're looking to partner with other countries, maybe countries that haven't had nuclear power before?
Well, I think that's really the thing that differentiates U.S. technology versus foreign technology is that when you buy U.S. technology, you get the full support of U.S. industry and government. And in other countries, we see other big technology projects that, you know, does not have the safety record, doesn't have the security record. A lot of times we see a lot of technology that comes with strings attached. So you may buy, say, a Russian reactor, but the Russians may, you know, want to offer you financing at a, you know, like a lemon deal. And then you are stuck with the Russians and they may want to supply your fuel and they are now in your country. So, and we see how they deal with some partners. You see what happened with Ukraine. They're cutting off a lot of energy supplies. So you have to think about that. And countries have to think about that when they buy a reactor. They're not only buying a reactor, but they're buying a partnership with the country as well. And some people are not good partners.
Do you think policymakers understand like how important that is, that if a different country chooses Russia, they get a 100-year commitment with Russia, they get Russian workers, they get Russian technology? Do you think policymakers in the U.S. understand how critical it is for the U.S. to make these agreements before someone like Russia or China?
I think some policymakers understand. I say certainly at DOE, they are well aware of that. I work a lot with the National Nuclear Security Administration, NNSA, which is an administration under DOE, and they certainly push that and that understanding of that. Also, within DOE, I think the word is out. I think State Department understands that sometimes the issues that we have is that we're a democracy, right? Other countries are not. And so they can actually do things a lot faster because, you know, they don't have to get like approvals, or they can change whatever they need to without having regulations. So I think it's understandable. I think we can definitely work through it. We've had lots of successes and I expect to see more successes in the future. It's, you know, becoming dire, not only abroad, but domestically. We see here in the U.S., you know, the uranium supply and trying to stop relying on different foreign partners for uranium supply. I just saw an article about Secretary Granholm urging Congress to cut off Russian uranium supply. So we are doing these things. I think what is really being understood in a wider circle is that energy security is national security, really and truly. So that is starting to become very clear, I think, especially with the actions of Russia and the Ukraine and the cutting off and the bombing of the Nord Stream gas line. And you're seeing that you really can't do anything, you know, as a country unless you have energy to supply your nation. One of the things that is an impediment, right, to having an electric vehicle, you have to have those hookups. You have to have dedicated parking, or, you know, around my neighborhood, people are lining up at the Target sometimes trying to get a charge and that sort of thing. So we can see you can literally be handicapped from getting to your destination, getting to work by energy security in some cases, because you don't have, you know, a car that or a charging port, or yes, maybe you can't even afford an electric car. They are very expensive. But, you know, these are the kind of things that nuclear can help to alleviate. It's baseline power. It's gonna fission day, rain or shine, snow, tornado. It's going to do what it do. So I think that's one thing about nuclear energy that you can say versus a lot of the other renewables. Though I think renewables also have their place as well. Again, everybody needs to be in this conversation. Nuclear, solar, tidal, wind. All of that.
So I asked you about policymakers understanding the importance of nuclear. Do you think the general public understands the importance of needing nuclear energy? Like when things like this happen, you know, you need a place to charge your car and you can't find one. You need to charge your cell phones. You have to charge. I mean, literally everything we do now, you go to the doctor's office, like there's some sort of new technology that uses a lot of energy. You go to the airport and, you know, there's like AI. When you're using Clear, or even when you're boarding now, a lot of flights, you don't even use your boarding pass anymore. They just scan your face. Do you think that this increased use of energy all around us makes the general public realize that, you know, nuclear is going to be should be a big part of our energy future? Or do you think we're not there yet?
I think we're getting there. Very optimistic, especially I would say the Gen Zers. I think they're getting there. I think they totally understand climate change. They understand the need for energy. I think that more and more are starting to become aware of nuclear. But I think it's going to be up to this new generation, you know, to really push for that. And I think they are, you know, it's, I think that is their shakeup, is to realize that these things are going on and bring it up to, you know, their parents, their law, the lawmakers and things like that. So I'm very excited when I talk to them. So I feel like the tide is changing and it's slow and steady and it's being led by this new generation.
I love Gen Z. What are you most excited about in nuclear that you see on the horizon?
I would have to say it's the advanced reactors. I know that we have quite a few projects here at INL. I'm ready to get them up and running. I am very excited about that. Also because advanced reactors mean more nuclear non-proliferation work and being able to work with the developers to make sure that there are safeguards in place, that the IAEA is ready for new reactors and knows how to safeguard them, to all the way to the cybersecurity. So just the thought of having new technology out there on the grid that we've helped secure and to make resilient, and then also the energy generation. It's like it's solving so many problems. So that is what I'm excited and I can't wait. I know that we're building at least one reactor in the next, I think, 2 years here at INL. And we have, I think, in the pipeline about 4 or 5 in the next 10.
So this is all really exciting. There's all these new things coming. Do you have any resources that you would want to share with women who are looking to get into the industry, or women who are already in the industry and are looking for kind of a community within nuclear?
So I am going to advocate for WINS. I love WIN, Women in Nuclear. My good friend Lisa Marshall is very active in WIN. She's the upcoming, she's the ANS vice president. So I also say ANS, the American Nuclear Society, and also INMM, the Institute for Nuclear Material Management. I think those are three really good places for women who are interested in learning more about nuclear.
Great.
So we love food here at Fissionary, and we have been ending our episodes by asking what your favorite local restaurant is.
This could be a podcast on its own, me talking about what I like to eat. So I live right now, I'm in Chicago right now. So I will tell you, there is a Malaysian restaurant in Chicago, and it is fantastic. Malaysian is like kind of Thai and kind, yeah, it's like Thai adjacent. And the name of it is Serai, S-E-R-A-I. It is delicious. I've never had anything bad from Serai. So, and my husband raised a rep about it, like it's our favorite spot to get food from if we have the chance. I love anything that has rice in the dish. So I love Asian food. I love, you know, Latin food. I grew up in Miami. So I'm always up for a good picadillo with arroz con pollo. All of that.
When you go back to Miami, what's your what do you have to eat?
Picadillo and arroz con pollo and maduros, so plantains, all of those things. I love Latin food, so especially Cuban food, because that's a big part of Miami culture. So black beans and rice. There's this fast casual restaurant called Pollo Tropical, and it has this chicken, roasted chicken. It is delicious. So yes, if you see a Pollo Tropical, get it. It will not disappoint. So those are two places. So that's a Florida one and a Chicago one. Both of those.
When my husband hears this, he's going to be cheering, because he grew up in Miami as well. And we just went down there and he was like, we should go to Pollo Tropical. And I was like, what is that? And he's like, I promise you, it's really good. It's worth the stop.
Wasn't it good? The chicken.
He's going to cheer.
Didn't get it.
We didn't go. We couldn't fit it in. So we're going back next month. I'm going to put it on the list. When he hears this, he's going to say, see, I told you that we should have made that a priority.
You have to go next time.
Yes. I will report back.
Like, and there's always one by the airport, which, let me tell you, like, that is our first stop. We're like Pollo Tropical. Boom.
Okay.
Check.
Okay.
So do that. I agree with him. See, he's right.
He's always right, and he will love hearing that broadcast live on Fissionary for the whole world to hear.
It's bold, Jordan. Bold move.
One other question, though. We got the Miami, we got the Chicago. When you are in Idaho.
Okay. So, yes, there is a ramen spot that I really like in Idaho Falls. It's called Hokkaido Ramen House, and it is really good. They have a ramen with a big beef short rib in it. Hokkaido Ramen House. And it is delicious. I always go there. It's great on a cold day. Lots of cold days in Idaho Falls. And you can get like this huge, they make it nice and spicy. It is delish.
That sounds so good.
It does sound good. I'm wanting ramen now, I think.
All right, Jatia, this has been such a good conversation. Is there anything else that we missed? Anything exciting coming up? Any big travels for you or your team that you want to share?
And I mean, really, again, I'm excited about nuclear. I know a lot of people in nuclear. I'm nuclear. I think we're on a winning team. I just ready for people to hear this and get on board and really to push and talk about nuclear. That's the challenge I have to the listeners. Talk about something you heard on this podcast with somebody else so we can get the word out about nuclear energy and get this going. Climate change erased. Let's go nuclear.
You heard it here, folks. Let's get on it.
Thank you so much, Jatia. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, really.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Amazing conversation with Jatia. So much great insight, especially a lot of really good food recommendations.
Mm-hmm. A lot of insight from Jatia and also from Jordan, our resident Wheel of Fortune contestant.
Mary, you got to do a game show next.
Oh, twist my arm. I love game shows. Maybe we should, I think it's going to be, it's got to be Price is Right.
We should do like a group trip to Price is Right where we can all go. And actually, Jatia, will you come with us?
Yeah. Yeah, we need Jatia. I feel like she would definitely dominate at Price is Right. I could see it. She would have a whole strategy for it, I'm sure.
You're right. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, Jatia, we're going to follow up with you on that. Thank you again for joining us. We've linked Jatia's social media in the show notes if you want to stay updated on her work, though I hope we can have her back sometime too.
I know. Yeah, I would love to keep talking with Jatia. But thanks everyone for joining us today. Please share, rate, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple or your favorite listening platform. And we'll see you soon for another episode of Fissionary. Bye.